From the St. Louis Public Radio Newsroom, this is The Gateway. Today is Wednesday, July 23rd. I'm Ala Kuziz. St. Louisan Mary Shannon spent years digging through Missouri records to see how medical debt has affected the region's neighborhoods.
It's great if these hospitals aren't filing lawsuits, but if the doctors inside them are, we still have a problem.
St. Louis Public Radio's Sarah Fentum speaks to the author about her research into lawsuits filed by two prominent physician groups. That's coming up after this news on The Gateway. St. Louis Public Schools Board of Education members shared their reactions to a new report on recommended school closures during a public meeting last night. After 2 years of surveying the district, an architecture firm presented its report that suggests closing more than half of the district's 68 schools. School Board President Karen Collins Adams says the report is the first step in a long process to consolidate the school district.
We need to be able to do things methodically with a lot of community input and consider not just the data, but the emotional impact that it has on everyone while we're doing this.
The district is facing a drop in student enrollment, in part due to declining childbirth rates. The Missouri Supreme Court ruled that the state's counties cannot levy a 3% tax on cannabis products at dispensaries located in towns and cities. St. Louis Public Radio's Jason Rosenbaum reports the decision is a major victory for the state's booming cannabis industry.
After voters legalized marijuana in 2022, counties across the state issued 3% taxes on dispensaries located in towns and cities. A St. Louis County dispensary sued, contending that counties can only tax products in unincorporated areas. The Missouri Supreme Court sided 6-1 with the dispensary, which could significantly reduce the amount of tax revenues that counties can get from marijuana-related sales. But Andrew Mullins of Mocan Trade says that the decision is a victory for consumers. He said that counties and the Missouri Department of Revenue should, quote, implement this decision without delay so Missouri can keep leading the way. I'm Jason Rosenbaum, St. Louis Public Radio.
The St. Louis NAACP wants Missouri insurance regulators to be held accountable to homeowners who can't rebuild after the May tornado. Adolphus Pruitt leads the chapter. He issued a report last month about disaster recovery barriers, since many North St. Louis homeowners are underinsured. He also emailed the state's insurance department, but received no response. The chapter is urging them to investigate insurance redlining practices and the state's insurance plan after the storm.
We're faced with property owners throughout North St. Louis who either denied insurance or forced to be underinsured to be hit by a natural disaster. And insurance companies are not treating them fairly.
The chapter is requesting an emergency market investigation of all insurers operating in St. Louis. Ferguson officials said yesterday that the city is making progress in complying with a federal consent decree to reform city government. As St. Louis Public Radio's Chad Davis reports, some officials worry upcoming budget cuts could stall progress.
Monitoring team officials say the city has made significant strides, including hiring more officers and selecting some to serve on its crisis intervention team. The city has also almost completed municipal court reforms. The accomplishments were shared during a status meeting. Proponents of the cuts say they won't affect police training. Patricia Washington is the city's consent decree coordinator. She hopes the cuts don't eliminate the experts on the team who are unbiased.
They are neutral, and they are reviewing the work that we are doing with an eye toward making us better.
The city entered into a consent decree 9 years ago after a white Ferguson police officer killed Michael Brown Jr., a black teenager, in 2014. I'm Chad Davis, St. Louis Public Radio.
Illinois State Police have determined the identity of three unknown victims of an infamous St. Louis serial killer. St. Louis Public Radio's Will Bauer reports law enforcement leaders believe an internship program with Southern Illinois University Edwardsville helped make the discoveries.
Since 2022, 8 students each semester have helped Illinois State Police look into cold cases. In the last year, genetic testing spurred by the program helped identify Kelly Johnson, Crystal Lay, and Carol Jean Hemphill, three victims of serial killer Maury Travis. ISP Director Brendan Kelly says the extra help is always welcome.
Anytime we can come up with a new way to amplify the resources that we have to have a force multiplier, and also have the opportunity to add knowledge and develop people who will potentially be working on these cases in the future. That is definitely a win-win.
Law enforcement knows of at least 12 women believed to have been killed by Travis. In Belleville, I'm Will Bauer, St. Louis Public Radio.
The Missouri Hospital Association's annual workforce report found that hospital employee vacancies are down in the state, but turnover has stayed steady. For registered nurses, St. Louis's vacancy rate of 6.8% is significantly lower than the statewide rate of 10.1% last year. Jill Williams is vice president of workforce development for the association. She says partnerships between hospitals and schools in St. Louis help keep nurse employment up.
But we do see in St. Louis area, the hospitals in St. Louis are really working closely with the schools of nursing and health sciences to build those relationships, to build those partnerships.
One example of this is a new partnership between Chamberlain University and SSM Health. The program will expand to St. Louis in November. A St. Charles County woman has admitted that she started a January fire that damaged four businesses in the Puerto Rican municipality of Cabo Rojo. 37-year-old Danielle Bertofi pleaded guilty yesterday in federal court in San Juan to a single count of arson. Bertofi admitted that on January 2nd, she poured gasoline outside of a bar that she had twice been asked to leave the day before, then lit a match. The fire damaged the bar as well as a nearby hotel, local craft store, and restaurant. No one was killed or injured in the fire. The businesses appear to have reopened.
I'm Jonathan Aul, newscast editor at St. Louis Public Radio. Federal funding for St. Louis Public Radio has been canceled. We're defunded, but we are not defeated. We need to make up $575,000 a year to support the reporting you've come to rely on and keep the Gateway thriving. This daily podcast is made possible by the work of everyone in the St. Louis Public Radio newsroom, anchors, reporters, editors, and producers, and they can't do their jobs without you. Consider a donation of $10, $20, or even $100 a month. It will help us navigate a challenging time for public media and provide you with the peace of mind that you are doing what you can to keep independent journalism strong in the St. Louis, Rolla, and Quincy areas. Give now at stlpr.org, and thanks.
Approximately 9% of Missourians say they have significant medical bills they can't pay. In the St. Louis region, physicians groups have filed hundreds of lawsuits to collect unpaid debt. New research in the open access journal JAMA Network Open found groups sued those in zip codes with low income and black residents more. St. Louis Public Radio's Sarah Fentum spoke with lead researcher Mary Shannon, who began looking into the lawsuits as a health caseworker. A patient inspired her to start digging.
That individual had received a summons to court from St. Louis University, and that is what made me aware of the fact that our local physician groups might be filing these lawsuits. And that's why I turned to CaseNet, looking at different physician groups. I would spend my evenings and weekends searching CaseNet by litigant name, looking for lawsuits involving these physician groups, and then finding the subset of cases that we were interested in, which were medical debt cases. These lawsuits were not filed by hospitals, but by the physician groups affiliated with them. The two physician groups that we found are also affiliated with St. Louis University and Washington University. It's great if these hospitals aren't filing lawsuits, but if the doctors inside them are, we still have a problem.
Right. And so when we talk about these lawsuits that are brought, we're mostly talking about what? Can you explain?
These lawsuits are brought against patients that have some quantity of medical debt. And we found the average debt that these patients carry to be around $2,000, but the median is closer to $1,400. So these are large sums for, you know, a family to manage, but relatively small sums for these physician groups and universities. We do know that many of these lawsuits result in wage garnishments for these patients, which tells us that these are working individuals who likely have some form of health insurance, but still wound up with medical debt that they could not pay and now are facing legal consequences on top.
You looked at who is getting hit by these lawsuits.
Correct.
And so tell me about what you found when it comes to demographically who's bearing the brunt of these.
Mm-hmm. It's hard to find a zip code not impacted by these lawsuits. But the zip codes that are most impacted by these lawsuits are our Black zip codes, our majority Black zip codes, and our lower income zip codes. So we can say and we can show that these lawsuits are having a disproportionate impact on the Black and low income community in St. Louis.
I think it is just worth asking for people who might be listening to this. Well, they received a service, they're not paying. Doesn't it follow that they would get hit with a lawsuit?
I know from my experience working in the clinic with hundreds of patients individually and thousands of patients overseeing the case management program there, that individuals want to pay their bills. They want to and typically are not able to. We know that providers need to operate and stay solvent, but suing low-income patients for very modest sums may not make financial or ethical sense, especially when we consider the large financial reserves that these institutions have. We know that there were lawsuits filed for sums as small as $104, $218, and I don't see how those cases make business sense.
That was researcher Mary Shannon speaking with health reporter Sarah Fentum. To read more about that story, including responses from WashU and SLU, visit stlpr.org. Tracy Tong edited that report. The Gateway is a production of St. Louis Public Radio, a listener-supported service of the University of Missouri, St. Louis. Music is by Ryan McNeely of Adult Fur. I'm Arda Kuziz, and from the St. Louis Public Radio newsroom, this has been The Gateway.